Inbounds Turner, left side of the backcourt. Turner across the timeline, throws it from high on the right. He hit it, Evan Turner! He hit it just inside of half court!
Lane's on the other wing. Finds
Sent it in, Jerome!
College basketball! This is March Madness!
Here we go, another episode of Mad About Hoops. We are so glad to have all you guys with us. I am your college hoops loving friend, Timmy Hall, and we got everybody here. We got the full crew here, Evil Bald Colin and Rhyme Time. Boys, it's good to see you.
It's great to see you, Tim. Just a quick statement before we start the show today.
Oh, no.
I don't want to start with statements. I don't make many promises, but I will make a promise for today's show. I will not make a comment about a coach, a player, anyone that's playing in between now and this recording and the Saturday morning replay.
I made a comment about Dusty May.
I kind of puffed my chest out a little bit, and I talked about how great of a season he had been having, and then Dawson Garcia heard me and said, you know what? You're about to find out.
Well, and yeah, you effed around and found out. And
that's
by the
right.
way, like Dawson Garcia, he was going on a tear, and I know they lost their game to Michigan State, but ever since he got held to 5 points by the Buckeyes, he had just been going nuts, and they had three straight wins
and a couple of big wins. They won in Carver.
Going into Michigan State.
Yeah, they beat Iowa on the road.
Yeah, they put me on alert for that game at the Breslin Center. They didn't get it done, but Michigan State is just looking like a vintage Tom Izzo team right now. That's actually something to watch nationally and here in Big Ten country. So we got a statement from Evil Bald Colin. That's good. Jacob, I know you want to talk a lot of stuff today. I'm sure you're going to do it. It's Duke and Carolina.
Yes, sir.
Oh, the beautiful people at Cameron Indoor. It's going to be a good one on Saturday, and we're actually going to have that one on The Fan, 6:15 coverage Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm interested to see who's going to be on the call for that game, for just on our radio.
Yeah, it's a Westwood One broadcast, and I actually didn't look it up, and now I don't want to because I'm curious as well to see who's on their broadcast.
Just find out when the game starts. Yeah.
F around and find out.
Yeah. But we got to hope I hope it's a good game. I don't have great expectations.
Yeah,
but.
So on Rothman and Ice on Friday, Anthony Rothman put your Tar Heels on his pressure list, under pressure for the weekend, and kind of made it as a statement of now or never with this program in terms of this season. I don't know if you feel that exact same way. It's been kind of a rocky up and down season for Hubert Davis's squad, but what do you think?
You need it. You have to get a split with Duke, I think, but I think even if you lose this and then you win the next two against Pitt and Clemson, with Clemson being on the road.
It was a nice loss to Pitt, by the way.
Yeah, nice
looked,
little
it looked good.
Nice little scoring drought, getting outscored 14-2 in the last 6.5 minutes.
We know something a little bit about that.
Gotta love that.
And a nice, thin, narrow win over Boston College at home. That was also very pretty by your Tar Heels.
It was beautiful. But it's not looking great right now. I'll say that.
So why don't you just go ahead and say it?
Oh, yeah. How about the Jayhawks?
How about that, huh?
Yeah.
How about that? You know, here's the thing.
This show's format's very funny because we have like three. In my case, I have two teams with Butlers in the dumpster.
I don't even
know what Thad Mata's doing right now with this team.
Does Thad have enough sucking candies to get through the season?
It looks like he's got a little bit more than just that if you've seen some of the clips on the sidelines.
What is he doing?
He's got the nicotine pouches, it looks like. He's got on the sidelines.
Really? Yeah. He's trying to kick a smoking habit, huh?
I mean, allegedly. I want to put allegedly on there. There was a screen cap of, it looked like he put like a packet of something in his lip during one of the games.
I remember this.
So it's alleged. I don't know for sure.
Alleged. Okay. I've never seen Thad smoking a heater. Have you?
I have not either.
Have you?
No.
I don't know.
No.
Who smokes anymore?
But honestly,
who smokes at all anymore?
Not smoking. That's technically like a smokeless Thad the vapor thing. Yes. Well, no. Not even that. But I mean, honestly, if you've seen the season that Butler's had and
under 500.
Yeah, it's bad, man. And I think they're just completely outmatched in the Big East. It's not been great. So I understand that if he needs some stress relief. But I thought that was pretty funny when we saw the clip go viral.
This should just be called the getting things off our chest segment, the first segment and recapping the week that was. But back to what he was asking about Kansas. And the thing that's overshadowed in their epic overtime meltdown against Houston.
And regulation.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. The regulation meltdown has been overshadowed by that, because when you see the little clips that get rebroadcast on ESPN or things that hit your phone alert, they would just talk about the, you know, the situation in the OT, like Kansas blows a 6-point lead with X amount of seconds left to go. Houston then takes the win in double overtime. First, that didn't even point out that DeJuan Harris is on the free throw line.
Up six
when
with the
up
ball.
Six. So they have ball. They got fouled. They're shooting two. Not one and ones. They're shooting two. And they still had that meltdown. And just to paint the picture, because it's when it's compounded, what makes it worse is the way they ended the regulation. And then they made all of those mistakes again, right? You're nothing if you're not learning from some of the mistakes that you've made. That's what we like about this Ohio State basketball team right now, is they seem to be learning from some of those issues that got them beat in these close games. But Kansas had the was up four, and Houston's got the ball. Okay, fine. Like, they can hit a shot, but you like to think you're Kansas. Let's play defense. Just get a stop, win the game.
Right.
Even if they hit, inbound the ball, make them foul you, hit your free throws, win the game. No, they give up a bucket. Okay. They have two timeouts. What do? Take a 5-second violation. Houston gets the inbounds. What do? Foul a guy on purpose. Put him on the line, went up two. They let him tie it. Okay, still have a chance to win. You know, you're Kansas. You can drop a set, win the game. What do? Slop the ball away, turn it over, go into OT.
Yeah, I don't even know what that
well
set
done.
Was.
It wasn't a set.
Yeah, there was nothing.
Just turn the ball over.
Is DeJuan Harris the one player in college basketball right now that I think has his
five,
name?
He's 5 years there.
Yes, 5 years.
Yeah.
A name that has pedigree, like, people know it and they consider him a great player, but I can't actually tell you what he does well outside of, like, defense.
I think I've had expectations going into each year that he's going to improve offensively as a scorer, and
no,
I just haven't seen
you
it.
Gotta just,
he's still a great, phenomenal playmaker.
He's a good playmaker.
Yeah.
He's a heart and soul guy. He's still averaging 6 assists per game. He doesn't have a horrible field goal percentage, so at least, like, his shot quality is good.
But this is
he's
a program 44%. That's gone on multiple years without having guard play that can provide sufficient offense consistently, and it's not getting any better.
They're relying on Hunter Dickinson, who leaves the ball in overtime and allows a wide-open three. I don't know what he's doing on that. The guy
I don't know either.
The ball can't do anything with it.
No, that was dumb. And Hunter Dickinson, you know, like, he's got some defensive issues, but he's also, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
Like, you have to deal with it because of the net gains that you get with his rebounding ability and his ability to knock down shots, anything inside of 15 feet. And he can hit the three, too.
Yeah.
When he's feeling it.
He's got
it,
and he's not a bad passer. I will say, with what Bill Self has done, putting Florey and Hunter Dickinson, I think they've really connected with the two big look, kind of going with a little Roy Williams style.
Especially when Adams has been out.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so weird. Like, I'm looking at the Big 12 standings, and Kansas is fifth. They are fifth at 6-3.
They must be doing, like, a giveaway.
Just wait a second. Yeah. That's the other thing. Is that
we can't mute
God
it.
Damn phone. We can just put this on the podcast version. We may as well. The fucking phone. God damn it. We're just in the middle of our segment. We're going along, and Man and Bone are running some kind of contest. How many Nate Bergazzi tickets are going out right now, do you guys think?
It feels like they've been doing it for like 2 weeks now.
My goodness. Look at you, too, all Dayton'd up. You not only got the Dayton hoodie,
baby.
You got the Warped Wing
yes,
Brewing
sir.
Company hat.
Yes, sir. That was planned. And they're going to lose the Arch Baron Cup tonight.
What's your favorite Warped Wing brew? They got some good ones.
I've gone with, I personally always get the Flyer NIL on, the Fly Light. I don't know. It's on the
They have a nice, like, lager,
it's on the,
right?
It's on the weaker side of things. I mean,
I'm with you there, though. I am not... I've been saying this for 15 years. I wish the IPA, what do you
I
call
do
it?
Like
the
those,
Gold
but...
Rush didn't take off the way that it did, because it's such a specific type of beer, and they just took over. It took over the beer
they
world.
They did, and I like those too, but I guess when I go there specifically, that one and the Trotwood is also a pretty light one. I like those too.
Trotwood, baby. Yeah, I'm trying to see what they got there. Browse those beers. You said the light lager,
they also have
fly light.
They also have like a Flyer American ale or like golden ale, something like that.
I've just become a wine guy.
Hey, I don't blame you.
Are
on
you
that.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I got a buddy that owns a winery, so.
Oh,
that'll do it.
Must be nice.
Yeah.
Machu Picchu.
Yeah.
All right, the phones have stopped ringing. We finished the dang segment. My goodness. Just recapping what happened this last week in college basketball. CB, anything else that strike you this past week? We got the Kansas meltdown out of the way. Good. They're 15-5. I don't have confidence that they're going to be a Final Four team. That doesn't mean they can't be a Final Four team. I won't move off of that.
Right.
But they are who they are right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We covered that plenty. And off air during the phone ringing situation, we were discussing Dayton because I'm wearing a bunch of Dayton stuff today. And on Friday, they are playing in the Arch Barron Cup. So by the time the Saturday replay happens, you'll know the result of that game in St. Louis between the Billikens and the Flyers. I would say it's been a rough compared to expectation season for Dayton. I mean, obviously they had some higher expectations being the A-10 and being the class of the A-10, but they've had some games where they've just gotten blown out, especially against George Mason, inexplicable. They went on the road to St. Bonaventure this past week, got blown out, not even close. Their defense has been a staple for them under Anthony Grant, and they're outside the top 125, 150 teams in KenPom in the efficiency rating for that. So it's just a very uncharacteristic year for them. And it's a program that has a strong fan base that wants to be vocal too. And they're kind of tired of Anthony Grant.
I think after that week in Maui too, like the expectations were just skyrocketed.
When you blow out UConn,
yeah,
absolutely.
Blow out UConn, you have a lead against Iowa State and Carolina, but you can't get those done. But still, you're competing with some of the top teams in the country. I think, yeah, it stinks to see how they've trajected since then.
All right, boys, we're going to get into a lot more. Of course, Buckeye basketball is making a run as they are on a 3-game winning streak and have a huge Sunday game on the road at Illinois. Did you see this, though? A head coach is urging a fan base to do something. We'll touch on that next. You guys are locked into Mad About Hoops.
All college basketball, all the time. You're listening to Mad About Hoops, the Fan, Ohio sports destination.
This is Mad About Hoops, your only college basketball-centric podcast here. I'm Timmy Hall. He's Evil Bald Colin, Jacob Reimer, Rhyme Time. Boys, how about there's a team that we didn't talk about in the opening segment that's streaking right now. They're hot.
Maybe their coach would go streaking too if he wanted to.
Maybe so. We talked a little Big 12. We did mention a couple teams in this conference. Big East basketball. 7-game win streak. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the Johnnies.
The Johnnies, baby. Rick Pitino. Dead Rick Pitino is alive. How about it? How about the Johnnies right now? I know when you blast Georgetown, Georgetown's trying to get it back, but you know, they are coached by Ed Cooley now. So G-Town in just 1 year, you talk about a massive rebuild that has to happen for Cooley, but He's already got a bunch of wins.
Yeah,
he's got some guys, and they've won a lot more games than he got last year. I think he's already doubled their win total. What, he went 6 or 7 or 8?
Micah Peavy's pretty good. They got that Jaden Epps who came over from Illinois. They're pretty decent.
Sorber down low. He's pretty big. A nice solid piece they have down there.
Yeah, but St. John's was up like 30 on them early.
It was like within the first 10 minutes, it was 37-9 or something like that. And I'm sitting there with a Georgetown +5.5 ticket thinking, oh, awesome. I thought I was sharp, but I guess not.
And St. John's is going to host Providence. If you're listening on the replay on the Fan on Saturday morning, it's going to be one of the first games of the weekend. That's going to be a nice noon Saturday tip-off. But they are 18-3, 9-1, right up there with Marquette. 2 18-3s and 9-1s right there at the top of the Big East.
Yeah, you would think that UConn would be right up there in that mix coming into it. But yeah, Marquette's been great. The come-up of St. John's, they're looking like a team that has for real Final Four potential.
And they've got RJ Lewis Jr. who's doing his thing. And then this is actually a Kansas transfer that didn't do much for the Jayhawks, but Zuby Edgefer is a 6'9", 240-pound, just big dude, can do a lot, just strong guy, 15-8 guy. He's huge for them right now.
And they got Simeon Wiltshire, who was originally committed to Carolina. And then I think either it was when Elliot Cadeau reclassified or either when Ian Jackson committed, He decommitted.
And then he went to Nebraska. Now he's found his way
at St. John's.
To St. John's. But no, he's done a great job at really putting this roster together with transfers. We didn't mention Kadarius Richmond from St. Yeah. Hall. He's been a great piece. I know I'm missing a few. Davion Smith was a guy who he got from
Utah.
He's
been out, yeah.
He's been out for a little bit, but was supposed to be one of his replacements at the point guard spot. So, yeah, he's done a really good job of building this team. My opinion on just the Big East as a whole, the health of it is kind of, I'm still waiting to see. But, yeah, no, you mentioned the top two teams right now, Marquette, built around Jones and what he's doing, mm-hmm. and then he's got some role players with him. And then, as we just mentioned, St. John's. It's I would probably expect it to be a two-team race with that. I'm curious to see what UConn will do when it comes to tournament time in that conference. But, yeah, it's going to be a great top three, top four looking at it right now.
But, hey, let's go back to the coach of St. John's who's got them in a little resurgence here, Rick Pitino, because Coach has invited us into his office. Isn't that lovely of Rick? So let's check out the Crypt Keeper himself and see what Rick has to say.
Hello, Big Blue Nation. I didn't steer you wrong with Mark Pope when I sent out that last video, and I certainly won't steer you wrong with this video. Toughest day of my coaching career at Louisville was when I had to walk into Rupp Arena. Tried not to show it, but when I went home, the reception, it tore me up apart because I loved that place so much. And it's interesting because I was speaking to Ed Cooley just recently about Providence, and he said he almost was brought to tears because of the bad feelings he got going back there. But this is different. And as you all know, I'm not best friends with John Calipari. I respect him, certainly. But it was a mutual thing. The fans wanted a change. John read the tea leaves. He needed a change. And he really didn't want to leave. But what did he do for you? He brought the best talent in the history of the game of any university in America to Lexington. He also won a national championship. He also was, his style of play was extremely entertaining. So he's coming back on Saturday, and I want all of you to show the great class that you have. 23,000 plus people giving him a huge standing ovation. Show him what respect and admiration's all about. I know you have the class. I've always believed in you. Do it once again.
Rick Pitino with the word for Big Blue Nation. So here he is coaching St. John's. Nothing's got anything to do with St. John's basketball, obviously, in that message. It starts off with I've got a message for Big Blue Nation. Who are you with again? What?
That was like coaching a little again? Twilight Zone at the beginning of the year when he was at the opening night for Kentucky. He's wearing a Kentucky quarter zip, and it was just like, wait, isn't he still at St. John's?
I can't imagine Val Ackerman, the current commissioner of the Big East, is very thrilled about that, because I know she was not excited about him going back to Rupp when he did that. He's making videos on behalf of Kentucky. Like, it's a weird feeling, imagine.
It's a weird vibe, right? And I respect Rick Pitino, and I respect, you know, how much some of these Hall of Fame coaches have accomplished, but I also think that your ego gets to such a big place when you do that. And maybe rightfully so, when you've won national championships, right? When you've done some things, look what it's done to Dan Hurley. I mean, I'm not saying I'm the biggest fan of it, but I kind of understand that. Where do you guys come down on this? Like Rick Pitino getting up there and telling Big Blue Nation how they got to treat Calipari when the Arkansas-Kentucky game happens late Saturday night.
When I saw it first come up on Twitter, I was like, is this actually real? Like, he's recording, like, I have to watch this. He's recording a video of something in his office, and then, yeah, he goes off on Big Blue Nation.
Like, what's
them
up with St. John's basketball
right
now?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Nothing.
Yeah, we're talking about Kentucky here.
We talk about Kentucky and Arkansas.
He enjoys flying with that team under the radar.
Apparently.
I guess.
Except for last season when he just
would rip his guys.
Everybody. A lot like it was the same thing that Mick did, wasn't it?
Pretty similar.
Rick Pitino did that last year.
Yeah, he did.
Used different words, but he did it.
After the Creighton game where he's like, I'm going to bleep and kill myself.
I'm not going to kill Rick Pitino too much for doing this. And I also understand and would say to fans, like, you've got the right, you buy a ticket, you've got the right to play that however you want to play it. Rick makes some good points in there that John Calipari did win you a national championship.
Yeah.
And you kind of wanted him to be gone. This was not like Jim Knowles leaving Ohio State to go to Penn State for the same coordinator type position, not elevate to a head coaching gig, not go to the NFL to take a DC position, just left to go in conference. And I know Cal goes in conference, but still, Kentucky fans, y'all didn't really want him anymore.
Yeah.
I think they are going to show him a little bit of love. I know people don't really like being told what to do.
That is a big part.
That's a thing. So maybe that this got especially out there, that might actually do something.
Well, especially if a fan base like them. I don't think they would like
Rick.
That.
They like Rick, though. Because we just saw that when Rick was back there.
Rick Pitino wants me to cheer and applaud. Okay. Yeah. We'll see how this goes.
Maybe Cal just asks the Tyson family for some chicken nuggets from his NIL deals down there with Arkansas, brings him up to Rupp Arena and kind of offers a peace offering. But no, yeah, they obviously should not have total animosity against him. But with big fan bases like that, you're going to have a mix of both good reception and bad.
I've seen a mix going around where it's like, yeah, we'll cheer him on. But then it's just like, no, we're not doing anything yet. He's still left. We need to make him understand that making this move wasn't good for him. You know,
I think his record and everything that's gone on has probably been a sign of that. But.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So he mentioned it in the clip. Pitino did get booed, correct? When he went back to Kentucky as Louisville's coach.
Sure.
I mean, that's also very different. It's Louisville's coach.
It's rival.
I don't think any of that had to be personal. You know, we got to sort of get beyond that. It's like what we've seen with Roy Williams.
Yeah.
And how. I love Roy, right? Like, but when you were doing your thing with North Carolina, and Roy even knew it. Roy was a smart enough guy. He understood not to really pull on those stitches.
He didn't want to do anything with Kansas. Like, didn't even, like, set up, like, because now they have the home-and-home series going on. Because I always thought at that time it'd be nice, and we got it this year, about Kansas and Carolina doing a little home-and-home series, and they did that.
And I always criticized him when he was UNC's coach that he would never dance with us. But I understand that now.
Yeah.
I understand how much heart must have gone into that because those are two of the biggest programs in existence. And he had like the two biggest chunks of his career. I mean, it's almost two different lives.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you think about it, one life at Kansas, one life at UNC.
Yeah, it's so circumstantial. I mean, the example I want to use here locally, I would say not necessarily the same, but kind of the idea of Marcus Freeman getting the job at Notre Dame, his first game in the regular season, coming back to Ohio State to play that game. Now, the Flames were kind of stoked when he made those comments about, I'm not going to make the same or the wrong decision twice
in
terms of going to Ohio State over Notre Dame. So, yeah, that made people angry, and he got the reception that he did when he came back. So it's not one for one in that case, but, again, it's a high-profile program with a high-profile coach. You're going to get people that are going to be on the other side of it.
I would say eventually everything should be cool and should be treated with grace and respect, right? Like, it really like fires me up when we saw Roy go back to the field house actually as a fan. Remember when he just wore the sticker on a plain black t-shirt because he couldn't wear apparel or anything. And someone like probably just gave him a sticker and UNC was out of it. But your guys made such a big deal about that. Just a sticker. It's like he was there 15 years. We can't even do this. We found out. Like, we effed around, found out. We can't even put a sticker on.
And now he went back after he retired and saw a game in Allen Fieldhouse, got some recognition of being there and everything.
I think they even had him in the press room.
Yeah.
Which was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, old times.
Gotta love old Roy.
Yeah. No, that was great. So, we'll see what happens. We'll see how this goes as Cal goes back to Rupp Arena on Saturday night. We are going to do a new segment here. We are going to do an arena review. Because Rhyme Time was actually out and about, actually saw a hell of a game as well. And he's got some experience seeing this arena multiple times. He'll let you know if it's one that you should check out. You guys are listening to Mad About Hoops.
One of these men is evil and bald. The other one is Timmy Hall, swinging his meat bat. You're listening to Mad About Hoops on The Fan.
Timmy Hall, Evil Bald Colin, Rhyme Time, Jacob Reimer. So, Jacob, you went down to see Dan Hurley.
Oh, yes.
UConn coaching Sean Miller and Xavier at CentOS. And you were saying how the F Dan Hurley chants had started up an hour before tip-off.
Much longer before an hour before tip-off. Like, yeah, they were locked. The Xavier students were locked and ready to go. It was a crazy game. Crazy environment. It was a blast getting down to the CentOS for sure.
So
you've been there, right, Evil?
No, I have not.
What?
I actually have wanted to go, and I've I've just failed to organize that, and it's on me. But
that's
my question was going.
Fail.
I was going to ask this. The first thing about it was obviously you saw Dan Hurley coach, the greatest basketball coach of all time, or the greatest coach currently
in the game.
How I understand it, did you feel like he looked like that in that game?
I don't know. No, I mean it. There was it was. I mean, watching him was a treat in its own. Aside from the game, because every media timeout, he's going
he's
to
working.
An official. I got a picture of him talking with an official, pointing his finger out, like trying to like list some things. There was one time where he just walked out to half court and he's just having a staring contest with an official at the other end.
And I told you were going to do this.
Yeah.
Like you were going to struggle to watch the game because now as a fan in attendance, your eyes are going to be fixed on Dan Hurley. It's almost like in a football game, if you want to pay some attention to the trenches and you're going to maybe avoid like where the football is going for a little bit to see some of those matchups. You got that with Dan Hurley watching live basketball.
Yeah.
Now.
There was just so much going on. Like he would lay his head down on the scorer's table after something happened, or when Fremantle had a wide open dunk, he did a little chin up on the rim, which it may have deserved a technical, but
and he throws his arms up.
He's running
that?
Down the sideline and everything, but it
technical
was,
foul.
That was a treat in its own watching, just getting to watch Dan Hurley in person.
So Xavier gets that win. I mean, just take us through before we get into the actual basketball game. I actually don't care a ton about the actual game. It was a big win for Xavier.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to see that. You got to see the home crowd fired up. So that had to show you a little bit of the muscle with the environment and just the overall arena experience. But this being an arena review, really the first one we've done. We've talked about arenas before, but a full scope, should people go down and do it? What was the experience like? How early did you get there? Just everything about it being a big-time matchup, Cintas Center. Go.
Yeah, so I was in the upper level. We got there probably about an hour and 15 minutes before tip-off and kind of walked around a little bit. There is actually an upper level above where I was sitting, but it's just standing room only for people to just go up there, stand, have drinks up there. They've got a couple of like bars and stuff up there. But it was very loud. Like I think it's inside the top 10 college basketball arenas in the sport. I mean, we were walking to our car after the game and I was hearing some Xavier fans saying that was louder than any crosstown shootout that I've been to.
So you got to hear some chatter from people that have been to dozens and dozens and dozens of games. They're saying that's the best one I've ever seen.
That's a top tier like rivalry too. Xavier Cincinnati, which that they always get locked in for that. And it's always a loud environment. And then, you get UConn rolling into town with Dan Hurley. There was a lot of fans screaming at Dan themselves. They were locked in on him as well.
Oh, I'm sure. It's if I remember correctly, it's kind of got a weird shape to it. It's almost like a U.
Yeah. Talk about the actual configuration of it, like how you come in and there's like this whole like side entrance way. It's almost like you're herded in like one area and then you kind of get around to where the court is.
It's in a U. You all come in the same entrance, at least from what I've seen.
You come
down
like
there.
That walk, right?
Yeah.
You come down that hill.
Mm-hmm. The steps and everything that leads you down to there. And then, it kind of just goes all around in a little U shape. And then when you're in the arena itself, it's like there's like a wall like on one end.
I like the wall.
Yeah.
It gives it that feel of a high school gym.
Yeah.
But obviously, this is much, much bigger because I'm looking the capacity up here. I want to say it's nice and intimate, like just over 10.
It
yeah, 10,224.
I think
that's pretty good.
It might be slightly less than Cameron Indoor.
No. Cameron's at like 8.
Okay, yeah. I mixed
change.
That up. I mixed
but it's
that
actually
up.
Kind of
it's
interesting.
Not far
I mixed that
off,
up,
though.
Yeah.
It's not far off, though.
I noticed that the shape of it kind of looks similar to me. I went to the Galen Center out at USC about 3 years ago to watch a USC-UCLA game. Fantastic. Loved it. I saw Johnny Juzang. It was a very
good. You saw Jaime Jaquez and Johnny Juzang. Jaime Jaquez,
Tiger
one
Campbell.
Of my favorites.
Yes, Tiger Campbell. It was a great game. USC eventually pulled that one out, but it's kind of like that, too, where it has that U shape, but instead of like a wall and the one basket side, it's almost like a big concourse/walkway. So there's really no seating or very minimal seating on that side. And it kind of keeps it feeling like a small, tight environment.
Yeah. Tell them about the way that they would troll Tiger Campbell. Just really quick bursts. USC would play a tiny snippet of Bob Marley.
Oh,
like
yes.
Like a 2-second yes. clip, and then shut it off when he's at the free throw line.
Specifically when he was at the free throw line. Amazing. Yeah, it was pretty funny.
You just hear,
that's incredible.
All right, we jam it, and then they'd cut it.
Yeah.
Just
man,
like that.
It's honestly, you don't think of it in terms of basketball rivalries as up there, but
it's good.
I could feel the environment.
Yeah.
Didn't they wear the colors?
They do wear both of their solid
yeah,
colors.
They both went solids.
And they do that in football, too, and it's great. I think they had Swaggy P, Nick Young, come back to do like a thing at one of the under timeouts in the first half. That was pretty cool. But yeah, no, it's, I mean, if you're ever in LA and it's this time of year, I think we were out there for Super Bowl Radio Row Week like this week. And it was a great time. I would advise it to anyone out there. Obviously you want to get the Pauly. That's mm-hmm. the one that everyone knows, but the Galen Center is just as good in my opinion.
Where were the students at?
The students were on the side close to the basket that had the wall or the walkway.
Okay.
But it's a very small section. It looks decent size maybe on TV, but when you get inside, it feels like a tighter environment. It's hard to describe.
That's how CentOS is, and the students are like kind of up against that wall. They go a little deeper though. They like there's a lot of seating, a lot of room for students down there. And it goes pretty deep to where you can have that like atmosphere, because they also hold a section for the band right there too. Right behind the basket, basically.
So we're talking about the CentOS Center and a little bit of, what was it called, Galen?
The Galen Center yep.
With Evil's trip to see a USC-UCLA basketball game. So CentOS seats just over 10,000. I think that is perfect for just the passion for that program. And how even for the longest time, they were regarded as maybe the best mid-major basketball program in America.
When they were in the
A-10? Yeah. I mean, they were so good, and they've almost been a cradle of coaches in a college basketball sense for all the guys that have come through there, right?
I mean, even Travis Steele's doing well at Miami of Ohio. They're competing for the MAC.
But even now, like what this arena is, I look at it too, and I'm looking at an empty picture. I love the gym when it's empty. You know, there's something special about that, like when you just see the stock Wikipedia photo and the lights are kind of dimmed, but the light's shining on the court. The blue seats to me make it like, tell us about the lighting and just sort of the ambiance.
It was kind of like it seemed darker, like around us, but then like just, everything on the court was a little bit brighter. But then when you have like the mix of the blue with the X and then in the paint and everything, it kind of makes that a little bit darker as well. But yeah, like everything, like I could hardly see upper level across from us.
Is it kind of like Brooklyn? I know a lot of people mention the dimmer lights in the arena part, but it's all kind of focused on the court.
Yeah. When you say Brooklyn, you mean Barclays?
Yes.
For the Nets.
That's a good comp. Yeah. The lighting around it, you really can't see much around it except for really the students, because they were all wearing white. It was a whiteout. That was the only thing you could really see down there.
But that's awesome too for the environment, just for the look and the appeal of that, even just wherever your seat is. Were you wearing white accidentally, maybe?
I was, yes.
There you go.
I was actually matching my mother with hoodies. I was I don't know if I'm ashamed or proud to admit that.
No, but this is a great conversation, and we're talking about schools like Xavier, or I've been to Dayton. That's also a great environment. Somebody's other schools in the state of Ohio that have these great arenas and great environments that I think we crave so much at Ohio State, and why we sometimes over complain about the environment at the Schottenstein Center.
Yeah, it would also be a goal of mine to see every single one of the MAC Ohio schools, just to see what they're like, because not necessarily what the environment's going to be, because they could maybe struggle to pack it in, especially if it's a weeknight
game.
You saw
Bowling Green, correct?
Yes, I did. I went and saw the Stroh Center at Bowling Green, and that one was gonna struggle to have a good environment with where the team was, and they were playing a good MAC team, so I got to see some good ball. They had Akron at the time. Our buddy Brandon Beam from the morning show is waving to us from inside the studio. He must have had to come in to cut a spot or something. Get the hell out of here, Beamer. It's not the soccer podcast. So yeah, the Stroh Center was a beautiful facility. Like, it's got a glass front to it, so it looks really pretty from the outside. It's relatively new, and I really loved it. And being a smaller place too, you basically had one concourse level up top, and then you just kind of funneled down to where your seats were.
I think
pretty cool.
I think if the convo, OU can really pack it.
I've been there too, and I think that place is just cool. It's old. It's one of those old style circular arenas from like the 70s or something.
Yes.
It's just a neat place.
I've
got
been
so
there
much age
multiple
to it.
Times because yeah. of like down in Circleville, that's where the districts were in high school.
Sure.
And so.
And it's big. It's got to be bigger than Cintas.
It is pretty big.
Yeah. It's pretty
that's
massive.
That's what she said.
That's all. I was talking about the building, but I've also seen basketball games, high school level games in the Convo Center too, and it's a great spot. I think probably it's got to be the biggest in the MAC.
I think so. Yeah.
All right. So final score for Cintas Center. People have to do it.
Oh yes, I think I'd go 9 out of 10.
A 9.
Yeah.
It's good.
Well, if he's saying top 10 arena, I think it's got to be.
Yeah, you're saying he was saying could possibly be one of the top 10 loudest arenas.
They've got some Skyline in there.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got
that.
They
have the Skyline ice cream.
That's on. I did not see that.
Okay.
No. That's on just one whole side of the building. Then on the other side, they got like your hot dogs and like nachos and mm-hmm. stuff like
it
that.
It should be one side, you know, of concessions Skyline, the other side Montgomery Inn.
Oh my gosh,
I'd be in on that.
That'd be game changing.
Right, that's all it should be. All right, we're going to talk about another Ohio basketball program that's starting to cook right now, and they could do a lot better to get a win on Sunday. Ohio State Hoops and where they're going. That's coming up. It's Mad About Hoops.
All the college basketball talk you can handle. You're listening to Mad About Hoops. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Timmy Hall, Evil Bald Colin, Jacob Reimer, Rhyme Time, who gets the wonderful task of editing all this stuff when it's done. And if you're listening to us on
Blame Tim for a lot of the edits you have to do.
Yes. Well, to be fair, what you'll enjoy when you go and listen to this on the podcast, it's the only way you can get the full, unfiltered, unedited version. We have a point in here where we get interrupted by the phones. Because we got moved into a different studio where we usually like to record. We usually record in the Blue Jacket studio, and our audio software was all effed up, so we couldn't use it. So we came into the Crew studio, which is fine, but 1460 Columbus, ESPN Columbus, runs out of the studio, and it has to have volume up on the phones. Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's magic, all right. And so when Man and Bone ran a little contest on their show on Friday, the phones got very loud and interrupted us right in the middle of a segment. And it really throws you off track. But we decided to just keep that in there. But boys, Buckeye basketball.
They're streaking.
Buckeye basketball to the quad, past the gymnasium. Bring your green hat. Let's go. They've won 3 straight. They beat Purdue at Mackey. That was it. Could we be looking at Bruce Thornton's 3-pointer at the end of the half to be down by 11 points at Purdue as a turning point of this basketball season for these guys?
I mean, I probably would have gone with the 15-0 run that Micah Parrish really fueled in the second half of that game. But that's fine, too.
I got you. Well, Bruce, I think, also scored at the beginning of the second half.
That's right.
To go on top of that. But it's just sort of the way you close and the way you start a second half. But you're right. Micah Parrish, I think, twice had back-to-back threes. That just helped fuel that rally and come up with one of the biggest wins in college basketball.
But honestly, I got to hand it to him. I did not have this expectation for Micah Parrish on the offensive end. I knew he could play great defense, but what was he going to do in terms of evolving his offensive play coming over from San Diego State? And it surprised me in a great way. And it's really needed for a team that didn't get a whole lot. And we don't know what's going to happen with Michi Johnson the rest of the way, but they didn't get a whole lot offensively consistently from him, so they needed another option, and he's emerged well.
Yeah, I think Micah Parrish has been great, and like you were hinting at there, like where the offense would come from outside of Bruce. I mean, we're getting the shooting from Mobley, who's been great on this stretch as well, like averaging like 15 a game, 5 assists.
But he can shoot way better than what he's shown. He's actually still missing a lot of threes that
That's
he
true.
Makes in his sleep.
Yeah,
I'm actually excited by that, not concerned.
I think
because I know Mobley can be better than that. But back to what you're saying about Parrish.
Yeah, I mean,
really
having that offense alongside Bruce, because it takes a lot of pressure off of him. And I think you saw that last night where there was 2 possessions in a row where there was just constant moving it around. And it led to 2 Bruce spot up threes. And it's coming into it. It was like,
great.
how is that going to generate? And now we're seeing it because they're unselfish. They're moving the ball offensively. And It looked phenomenal last night, I think.
You mentioned John Mobley, and one of the things with freshmen, especially freshmen that you think could be really spectacular at one thing, is developing another part of their game. And the assists, 15 assists combined over the past two games against Penn State and Iowa, he's really expanding that game, and he's making a threat that not only can he shoot the ball, you have to be careful with really closing out hard on him, because he can dribble drive and find those guys too.
Yeah, he was showing last night he can beat you to the rack, whether it's dishing it out for an assist or just finishing at the rim.
And that's what's exciting about him. And don't short him a dime. He's got 16 in the last two games.
Oh, my bad.
He's got 8 and 8. And that's incredible. I mean, 8 assists in a college basketball game. You don't really see that much. Like, you're getting up into Braden Smith land.
Especially
when, you get
when
close
he's not
to eight
the
to
ball
10
dominant
assists.
One.
Yeah.
Of course, right. He's not Bruce Thornton. And then you have this guy now that's a true freshman that wasn't even starting at the beginning, is now going in back-to-back Big Ten games when, you know, the three ball still isn't connecting like we know it can, and he's got 16 assists in those two games. This really is incredible news for Ohio State. I'm only starting to get worried that he might be a one and done, because this is how it goes.
I think we have a ways to go from
this
that.
This is how it goes for us.
No, you mentioned it. The three-point shot has not been on consistently lately, but the good thing about it is that he has the confidence both in himself and from his coach to keep shooting it, because they know when he's got it going, he can really go.
Yeah.
Why would you ever want to discourage that?
Absolutely. But
he needs a little bit more of the practice and focus on the wide open ones. You know how he'll hit with a pump fake and a guy will fly right by, and then he gets to reset and shoot a wide open
almost
one.
Almost like
he's
he doesn't even expect
those.
It's weird.
He's hitting from the logo when maybe he's not thinking about it as much, but he had a ton of corner threes in the last three or four games that, you know, he makes these with his eyes closed.
Yeah.
In practice, they're all going in and they're going to connect. Like, this guy has huge games ahead of him. I really think, I don't want to put it out there, and then, like, anytime Colin puts something out there in a prediction version, it is dead wrong. So keep saying bad things about it.
Well,
but
it's tough.
I think he's
it's
got.
It's tough against Illinois.
I think he's already gone through his wall, is what I'm saying.
That's fair.
I think he's already gone through his wall, and he is just starting every game that happens, figuring things out. Not to say he's going to get you 19 or 20 and 8 assists in every game, but it's slowing down for him.
Yeah.
You can see that happening.
It's really coming into his own a little bit. And yeah, with being able to come more of a shooter, more of a scorer, and dishing out those assists, that's next level stuff.
So this Illinois game, this is not out of the question. It's not.
Absolutely.
Like, this team that beat Purdue on the road, Illinois has lost 7 basketball games. This is college basketball right now. For a second, I would have thought Illinois looked pretty untouchable with where this Buckeye team was and where Illinois is. Now I don't. Now I almost have a thirst for this game.
Because a few shows ago, I booked Illinois into the Final Four at the start of January.
And you know what? They still could.
Yeah.
They still could.
I don't know, man. Something about Brad Underwood, I just can't trust it all the time. But he's got a talented team. It's a very young team. Ivasic, Jackie Jonas, and Will Riley, who's kind of had his moments here and there. But it's a very strong, young team.
They've lost 3 out of 4, and they just lost on the road in Nebraska.
It's a young team that you can get after.
Yeah. And Isovich hasn't been there. He's been
sick. That's right.
So if he's not available for the game on Sunday, that's another huge piece for Ohio State with the way they've been rebounding. I wanted to hit on that. Like, in the first half, they were out-rebounding them, 32 to 23, I think, maybe?
It felt massive.
And they had 9 offensive rebounds, just generating those second-chance opportunities.
The Buckeyes beat Penn State by almost 20 on the boards.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge, because their defense maybe wasn't as good as it was against Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the shots they were letting Penn State get, I thought they could have been a little bit smarter, a little tougher. I thought the refereeing was about as bad as I've ever seen.
The second half was bad.
Then at some point, you do start to focus a little bit more, and you're saying, okay, you are fouling there. Okay, you did foul there. And then I got a little pissed off where in the final 2 or 3 minutes when you've got the game won, I'm still seeing the hand come down. Like, instead of just keeping the hand high, why bring it down and, like, force the refs to make the call with the way that they're blowing the whistles? But the rebounding, aside from the defense, was the other thing, and it got them, like, 15 more possessions or so.
Yeah.
By the time the game was done, maybe 20. Like, it was huge.
The rebounding has been huge down these last few games, for sure.
Yeah, I love to use KenPom for a lot of trends and a lot of changes from year to year with programs. And we saw a lot under Holtman. The defense kind of slacked towards the back half of the year.
It started hot at the beginning of the program.
And we get outside the top 100 in efficiency. Right now, they're sitting heading into the Illinois game at 21, 21st overall on defense.
They haven't allowed more than 70 in the last three games. Purdue put up 70, but then it's been 65 for Iowa, and then I think, 62 for Penn State?
But it's really the depth.
I'm glad you point that out because I've been harping on this on the Buckeye show, the trend with their defense.
Yeah.
Like, this is what actually, like, take your heart, take your emotion out of it here if you're afraid to maybe get on board and then the cart falls apart. But they're a balanced team. That's why I kind of think this is going to continue. I'm not going to say they're going to win all the rest of their basketball games, but I have positive thoughts about what they can be because of what they're doing out there in a top 20 defense with a top 38 offense. Those are really good numbers. That's a tournament team.
Yeah,
the way you achieve
that. You
got to
still go earn it, but looking at numbers, that's what a tournament team looks like.
The way you achieve that is when you build quality depth at certain spots, and especially in the front court, it's starting to develop. You're getting more great, solid minutes from Ivan Yogovin, and he's really providing a good post presence both offensively and defensively in the short amount of time we've seen.
Yeah, he's been big.
Bradshaw's starting to really get his offense going when he gets off the pick and roll, some of his roles and some of his going against drop coverage, he's done pretty well, especially in that Penn State game to attack. And then Sean Stewart seems to get a little bit more comfortable. He's more solid on the defensive side, which helps. Mm-hmm.
And if he can get into those passing lanes, you know what a gazelle he is, and then throwing down dunks. If you get him out running and filling a lane, that's what can be killer in a good way for this team. So I like all that. And we talked about Stewart and Bradshaw. They would be keys to the season, like, as they go, if they were going to turn into something. And those other four guys, and Devin Royals become so good. Bradshaw and Stewart don't have to be stars. Just keep getting better. And Yegovan, just get in there and improve and be a 7'1" guy and hit the glass, get everything that comes near you. And I wanted to see him protect the rim a little bit better against Penn State. That was
I'd like
one
to see
thing.
Him in his finishing around the rim get better too. But
Yannick
otherwise,
Conan had a couple of big plays on him that I would have loved to see him shut down because he's as tall as him.
But he's getting the gritty play, which I think is really what they need from a defensive or just a guy on the boards in general. It's just kind of be that guy that can get in the dirt and get those boards.
All right. Well, I think that was a good podcast for this edition. We're getting pretty late into the season. We're like right in the thick of it. January heading
we're
into February.
On Saturday. It's February 1st.
February.
I think Sunday is 6 weeks from the bracket.
I think so.
All right. Well, if you're listening to the replay on The Fan, good news. Duke and Carolina, 6:15 this evening. Get some coverage of one of the biggest rivalries in all of sports. Sorry, Jacob. Sorry about the loss.
Yeah.
Even though it hasn't happened yet.
I don't have high hopes.
No, you shouldn't. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Anywhere you get your audio, download and subscribe. We're here every week talking college basketball. It's Mad About Hoops.
You know what they say, four wheels move the body, but two wheels move the soul.
Poetry, mate.
But don't think my motorcycle or my soul will be moving anytime soon. Got a flat tire.
Ah, that's all right. You ride with Geico Motorcycle Insurance and got their 24/7 emergency roadside service. They'll get you back on the road.
Ah, beautiful saying. You come up with that?
It's not a saying. It's a Geico motorcycle policy.
Tomato, tomato.
It feels good to ride with help. It feels good to Geico. Emergency roadside service is optional coverage.